And meeting is yours, sir.
All right, we're starting at 6:31. We'll get right into it. I think we have a is Tyson on the line?
Yes.
Hello, Tyson.
Tyson, if you can press *6, that'll unmute your line.
Can you hear me?
There you are.
Can.
All right.
All right, Tyson, it's your show.
Oh, man. Well, Joe, I think it's your fault to have gotten me into all this, 14, 15 years ago, whatever it's been, right? But, no, in all seriousness, good grief. Time flies. To the rest of the board and Stanley on Mud, residents, I am submitting my resignation tonight. I've got some property changes, et cetera, that are occurring. And so it's at the best interest with the sale of those that I go ahead and resign from the board. So it's with definite mixed emotions that I do that. Joe, Ken, Keith, Kelly, good grief. You know, just it's an absolute honor to serve with y'all, and especially that, you know, both previous board members and current. Ken Keller, Andrew, Janice, you know, everybody there at the Mud. I think the world of you guys. And then, you know, Steve, Don Carlos, Chris Lane, you know, so many folks, Hal, again, I'm going to miss all this tremendously. I hope that in, you know, what we've done over time with the Mud is, and my participation with that is I hope, we've maintained what San Leon is, right? And so, again, mixed emotions, but am resigning effective this evening from the board. Thank you all so much. Okay,
Tyson, I'll have to say it's been a pleasure serving. We've been through a lot of stuff together since this all started: storms and hurricanes and floods and a little bit of everything else, and couldn't have done it without you. So, appreciate everything you've done. The best to you and your family. Please stay in touch. And if I ever need anything, I'm going to call you.
Oh, absolutely. Keep it on speed dial.
All right, buddy.
Hey.
All right, guys. With that being said. Steve, do we need to go ahead and vote to accept this resignation?
Yes, it does require a vote of the board.
Okay, I thought so. All right, do I hear a motion to accept the resignation of Tyson Kennedy from the board?
This is Ken.
I'd rather not.
All right, I think that was Ken making the motion. Do I hear a second?
This will be Keith. Second.
Hey, Keith. Thank you, sir. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The next item on the agenda is consideration and appointment of a replacement for Tyson. We have provisions in the Texas Water Code, specifically 49.105, that gives us the ability to appoint someone to serve out an unexpired term. We have had two individuals that have expressed a willingness to serve out this unexpired term. We have Mr. Mark Niles, excuse me, of San Leon that lives in San Leon. He's retired, and he has expressed an interest, and I think you've seen his little recap, a little resume or bio. And we have Cheryl Bahima, who also lives in San Leon, is a business owner, been here a long time, very connected to the community, and has had past water board experience in a neighboring county in past years. Directors, do I hear and have any discussion of either one of these two? I take it that I don't hear anybody raising their hand there, any discussion. If not, since we have two, I'm just going to go in the order of which they expressed the interest of this. Do I hear a motion to nominate Cheryl Behema for the vacant position vacated by Tyson Kennedy?
This is Ken. I nominate Cheryl Behema.
Okay. Do I hear a second, please?
Keith, I'll second.
Okay. This one I am going to ask for all in favor of Cheryl to fill the vacant position.
This is Ken. I do.
Keith, aye.
Okay. Kelly, are you going to vote? Are you on board, or?
I would vote for the other, but it's a majority. So.
Okay. All right. We want to thank both parties for expressing interest in this. Cheryl, I think you're on the line. We will be in touch, and you will be sworn in officially to the office in November's meeting, which I truly hope is a live meeting face-to-face. You are on the board as of now. Since you're not sworn in, you won't be voting tonight on anything, but that will take place in November. So congratulations, Cheryl. And Mr. Niles, we certainly want to give you an opportunity in the future if something comes up. So we will certainly have you close at hand in the event there's another opportunity, or in case if you want to run in one of the elections that are coming up in 2 years, in that we encourage you to do so. All right, we're going to move directly on into the public comments. I remind everyone there's a 3-minute time limit. Ask your questions or make your comment. All questions will be answered by Andrew before the next meeting. Please keep your questions direct, and please no repeat questions that we've already answered. All of the question answers are on the MUD website. So at this point, Andrew, I don't know if anybody has a hand up or anything at this point.
Yes, sir. So as a reminder, as said earlier, *9 would raise your hand so we can call on you during this public comment section. I do have a raised hand from someone. You will need to identify yourself for the minutes. And I'm going to go ahead. It just says call in user 1. So if you can please state your first and last name, and then I'll start the clock for you.
Yes, sir, Andrew. This is number 1. David Jatlina speaking.
Yes.
I've got 2 points for you. Point number 1, at the February regular meeting of the San Leon MUD Board, Philip David Haskell provided notice to the board that it had failed for many years to adhere to Texas statutes requiring competitive bids for water district projects. Now resigned board vice president Tyson Kennedy requested that water district manager Miller provide an objective study of using private contractors versus water district employees to complete said projects. Subsequent to Kennedy's request and Mo's acceptance to provide said report, Manager Miller embarked on a program to solicit contractor bids via scheme, which I believe was defective and adverse to the fiduciary interests of the water district rate payers. At the June regular meeting of the San Leon MUD Board, I requested, and President Manchaca agreed that I would be granted access to the opening of the contractor bid solicited by Miller. Subsequent to that oral agreement, Manchaca and Miller failed to provide me access to the bid opening event. Subsequent to that bid opening, the board awarded certain contractors contracts, which I feel was actually a sham and adverse to the fiduciary interests of the water district ratepayers. Question. Will the district please post the contractor study ordered by Vice President Kennedy to the Water District website? This for the benefit of the public. Any comment?
We'll respond as necessary, but I will make a quick note. I will make a quick note, sir, regarding the public opening bid. It was publicly advertised that it would be at the water department at 6:30. And there was no.
Was not. Andrew, we could take that up later. Okay. We can argue that later. It was not.
Okay. Okay.
A minute left.
David, if you have something else to say, say it.
Point number two. Let me continue. You start on your own clock. Let me go. Point number two, please include active Zoom hyperlink on future district meeting notices. That's an active hyperlink in your PDF, Andrew. It's not that complex. It's not rocket science. Please do it. I'm finished.
All right. Duly noted. And as Joe mentioned, we will respond by next meeting. The next individual who had raised their hand was John Wade. John, I'm going to go ahead and acknowledge your raised hand in the system. If you can press star 6, that will unmute your line.
Can you hear me, Andrew?
All right, I'll go ahead and start the timer. You may state your questions.
Yes, there are three candidates currently for the MUD board. It's come to my attention that according to county records, candidate Haskett has approximately $17,000+ in property taxes owed. My questions are as follows. How much of that amount is owed to the MUD? And are there any other candidates who owe back property taxes who are basically living on the taxpayer's dime that are paying their taxes? That's my only two questions.
All right, duly noted, John. I'll go ahead and mark those down and we'll get to that. And the next hand we have raised is Mr. Haskett. If you can go ahead and press star 6, that would unmute your line. I'm going to acknowledge your raised hand in the system, and you can go ahead when you're ready.
How about that, Andrew? Am I unmuted now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, my first question is regarding the appointment of Ms. Cheryl, I didn't catch your last name. Doesn't it go without saying that if I'm running for the board that I would have wanted to take the remainder of that of Mr. Kennedy's term if I failed to be elected? And if that wasn't self-evident, then I request that the board revisit the issue of appointing the woman that was just appointed after the election but before she is sworn in. And I base that on my understanding from Mr. Sullivan of Sullivan's drugstore that during his administration or during his tenure as a board member, that a resolution was passed that stated that whenever there was a resignation, the last person who had stood for election unsuccessfully would be the appointee to replace the person who has resigned. So I'd like for you to verify that that resolution exists, and then revisit that issue between now and the November meeting after the election. My second question is, looking at the draft audit, I observed that on August the 19th, the district sold $6 million worth of bonds. I cannot find any reference to that bond sale in the minutes going back as far as June, either in the special or the general meeting. And so I want to know if the board held a private meeting or a non-open, non-public meeting to approve that bond sale. And finally, I want to know what the interest rate was on the $6 million bond issue and what the terms are. I'd like that to be posted ASAP so that I can compare the interest rate that we obtained on the $6 million bonds against the 2.95413% interest that we're paying on the $22.75 million that you borrowed nearly a year ago. The first use of which is just going to be occurring at this meeting. That money has essentially been sitting still for a year, costing us $56,000 a month. More than $600,000 has been wasted. Third, I noticed that the the assets of the district have decreased. The net assets have decreased by $1,154,000. And I would like the board to acknowledge that in large part, that net decrease is due to the $600,000 that was wasted in interest on the aforementioned bonds. Also, I noticed that Mr. Todd and Associates has submitted to the fire department a letter certifying that he conducted some sort of an audit. And I want to know if the board intends to accept that letter as substantial compliance with the provision of the contract for fire services that requires a certified audit be conducted once a year. That letter is page 108 of the current board meeting packet. So even though it wasn't mentioned on the agenda, it certainly was put into the board meeting packet as something to be considered tonight. Yeah. Let's see.
That's a little over your 3 minutes, but I'll let you finish that thought there, Philip. So
well, actually, I have one more question that relates to Mr. Wade. His payment this month from the MUD has increased by $125, and I want to know if that...
Philip, I've gone ahead and muted your line because you have gone beyond your time. So if you have something you would like to bring up with Mr. Wade, you're welcome to do that on your own time. But pursuant to our public comment policy, you've had your 3 minutes, and we will proceed from there. I do not have anyone else with a raised hand, Joe, so the meeting is back to you.
Okay, we're going to close public comments. Thanks, everyone. The meeting or the questions and the answers will be published as soon as we get them prior to the next meeting. We're going to go immediately into the audit. Who do we have present to walk through that? Do we have someone from McCall?
Tim, are you unmuted there? We've got Tim on the line. Tim, are you unmuted? It looks like your line is active. Tim, can you speak now, Tim? We're having
just barely hear him.
Yeah. A little bit of an echo there, Tim. Barely hear you. I'm going to go ahead and ask if you can exit out if you're in the app or end the call if you're calling in. I'll look for you in the meeting room to bring you back in.
Let's move to the next item on the agenda here. I believe it has to do with health insurance. Let's see if we've got better luck there. Who do we have? Who do we have there from Commercial Benefit Services?
Craig, I think your line's unmuted. You can go ahead.
Okay, it's Craig Murphy as well as Eric Gutierrez from Commercial Benefit Services. We're the insurance brokers, and I believe Eric is going to start off.
Good evening, everyone. This is Eric Gutierrez. Craig is our managing partner. I am also a partner at Commercial Benefit Services. I've been to several meetings now, last 8 years or so, and it is a pleasure to be with everyone again, even though it's virtual. So going right into the health insurance, as always, we shop all plans from all carriers. Everyone that will issue a bid to the MUD district has been, a quote has been acquired. We shopped PPOs, HMOs, EPOs, point of service, fully insured, level funded. And I'd like to start with, before I get into the quotes that we've received, I would like to go over the current rates and what the renewals are. So just a refresher, we currently have Blue Cross Blue Shield of Texas. There's a PPO and an HMO option. Current monthly rate based off of the time in which this renewal was generated, which is approximately 45 days ago to 50 days ago. We have currently in monthly cost, we have 12 people on the insurance plan. $14,709.91 is the total cost. This is between the employer and the employee. No changes here in terms of the benefits. So everything is exactly the same in terms of deductible, max out of pocket. Co-pays, Blue Cross did not tweak the plan that everybody is on. And the renewal would go to $15,921.92. And this is an 8.24% rate increase. Additionally, there is pretty good utilization for the group. So the utilization is 42.18%. That's unusually low. Typically, you have a utilization of 70 to 80% is what we would consider a group running having regular claims. So the claims in comparison to the premiums are low, which is definitely good. It was not that case last year. In fact, it was quite high last year. It's much lower this year. So that's definitely a great thing to have happen. We shopped out. It's very difficult without sharing the screen, unfortunately, but this has been submitted to the board prior. I'm looking at, so if anyone wants to follow along with me and if they happen to have the presentation, the PDF that we sent over, if they have it in front, you can see the renewal information on Plan 3 along with an alternate option, which is an HMO. And in addition to that, we looked at other PPOs. And just to specify here, fully insured options. And just to specify here, a fully insured carrier such as Blue Cross does not ask health questions. This is strictly based off of home zip codes and the dates of birth for those that are on the health insurance plan. When we looked at the rest of the fully insured market, this is Aetna, Cigna, United, Humana, et cetera, without a doubt, Blue Cross, the renewal is the most competitive option. However, there are some other options in the market that are level funded. And the main difference there is that versus a fully insured option, a level funded option is going to ask you health questions. So we went through this 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, if my memory serves correct, and we actually switched to an Aetna level funded plan. And we did enjoy substantially lower rates for 1 year. The reason we had to leave Aetna was because we had a particularly bad year in terms of claims, and then the renewal was quite ugly, and we had to go back to a fully insured option. But there are a couple of level-funded options. For example, on page 4 of my presentation, you can see it's called All Savers. That is a United Healthcare product. So that's a very, very large carrier, a very, very large network, and you can see this is a PPO that this is an EPO that we're looking at here, and it's a little bit better plan for approximately the same price as the renewal. However, for this option to be pursued, we're going to have individual health questions be filled out by the employees. There's pros and cons to that. Unfortunately, it does take some time and they're fairly invasive. However, we've certainly done it before and it's just fine. So that's one option. On page 5, I've moved to a TPA, which is a third-party administrator, called Assured Benefits Administrators. And this is a company out of San Antonio, and the rates are very, very good. However, I will warn everyone, I have not had wonderful experience with ABA due to a weak contract issue. So we wanted to bring this to you because it's our job to bring you all of your options. It's not our job to pick, it's just to bring you your options and kind of answer your questions and guide you and give you our recommendation, of course. I don't recommend ABA, but I wanted to bring it to you because with rates this low, 12,322 and another plan, 12,627, these are PPO options, and with rates this excellent, we owe it to you guys, we owe it to the board to present it. The problem with this contract is that if you lose any people during the plan year, you might not have enough money to reach your what's called aggregate stop loss. So again, it's a riskier thing. I have had groups with ABA. I've had many groups with ABA. I no longer have any because of this issue. But if this is something that we want to talk about further, of course, we'd be happy to do so. So those were our findings after shopping the market. We try not to bring everyone a phone book full of plans. However, I'd like to present to anybody on the board, if they want to see a particular plan from a particular carrier or would like to see the full quotation from a particular carrier, we can make that available upon request immediately. And Craig, do you have anything to add to that?
I think you've covered it really well. I think that Yeah, we wanted to make sure that we didn't leave any stones unturned. Obviously, it's hard to when you're running so well, it's hard to justify why you're getting an 8% increase, but that is sort of the way the market works. If you're willing to, if you want the, you know, that alternate HMO plan is a little, it's similar, but it's not exactly the same. It'll bring that increase down to about 0.96% increase. So less than a 1% increase, but you're giving up benefits in exchange for that.
I'd also like to add one last thing. There's been some announcements. There was a story in the Houston Chronicle approximately 2 weeks ago, and Janice asked me to look into it. But basically, Blue Cross will be issuing some discounts and some rebates. This is per Affordable Care Act mandate that a certain amount of the premium that's collected must be used for claims. And anything that is not used for claims over a certain percentage, in your case, it would be any 20%, then it's going to be returned to all the groups. We're still waiting on word here, so I'm very hesitant to say exactly what's going to happen, because to be honest, you don't really know until it happens. But I would expect a very, very, very small rebate, something of like $1 per person for the entire year, something like that. And then also, Blue Cross has said that they will be reducing premiums upon renewal in 2021. So unfortunately, this would be, we were talking about this time next year for the MUD district. It's about 15 years late on that reduction in premium. However, we don't know what that looks like. And to be honest, no matter what Blue Cross tells me, I would be very, very hesitant to communicate any number to anyone without seeing the renewal starting January 1 firsthand with my own two eyes. So we do expect lower than normal, and what that means exactly, we're not quite sure. So if anyone had any questions on that, I wanted to answer that as well. And that is the end of our presentation, unless anyone has any questions for us.
I do. Am I unmuted?
Yep, you're good.
Okay. I would think that the EPO, the All Savers or United or whatever it is, I would think that's not an option for us. Just because with the stop loss aggregate, we're on a fixed budget, and if anything, I don't think it's a good idea at all. If anyone thinks otherwise, that's fine. Let me know. On the alternate HMO plan, I'm assuming that is that a Blue Cross plan as well?
It is.
Okay. Good. So is the only difference, I see that the premium costs are lower, but also they don't have copays, and it's instead of like a $30 or $60 copay, I guess it's 90%, meaning the network picks up 90% and they'll be responsible for 10?
Correct. It's definitely a step backwards in terms of benefits. It's not something I'm eager to promote, because it is scaling back the benefits. However, I have to understand that, you are trying to stay within a budget, and I don't know what that budget is, but I wanted to make sure that this is sort of the best, closest option to getting you back to where your current rates are.
Okay. On that plan as well, on the alternate plan, I noticed that on the prescription drugs, it doesn't have like a top, I don't know if it's non-formulary or what it is, but it doesn't have the top number. I don't know if it fell off the sheet or if it doesn't have that. Oh, you don't know what I'm looking at. Like our current one on prescription drugs, it has 0, 10, 50, 100, 150, 250. And this other one has, I guess, the same amount of numbers, but the top these are percentages.
Yeah, they're percentages. Yeah. So 90% for preferred name brand, 90% for non-preferred name brand, 80% for Eric. You can go through it probably faster than I can.
Okay. And sure. I also probably wouldn't. I was just going to say.
It's basically substituting dollar amounts for a percentage paid. And so there will be some cases where you're paying a higher out-of-pocket amount than you would when you are just paying a flat copay. But yeah, this plan is, it's basically the, you know, this is the plan you would pick if you're trying to keep your renewal virtually flat.
Right. And just due to demographics, I guess, of our workforce, some of the drug costs could get pretty high. And so I personally don't think throwing our percentage would do well either. So I'm happy with the current renewal. That's my vote.
If I may add, I would concur with Mrs. Neeson. The reason we add this alternate is, you know, we have another plan in place. It's a PPO, and there are, I'm going to make sure I don't put a foot in my mouth. Okay, I'm looking at the Blue Cross renewal as we speak, and there is a grand total of 0 employees on the PPO. I never, ever recommend removing a PPO because who knows, you might hire somebody that absolutely must have a PPO, and to remain as a competitive employer, there's a good chance that you'll always have to have a PPO with copays. And so I think it's wise to keep it. It certainly doesn't cost anything extra to have a what's called a ghost plan, which is a plan that is available for subsequent employees hired, but however, do not have anyone currently. That being said, you can always add a third plan with Blue Cross. So for example, if, as Craig mentioned, if we're on a really, really strict budget for healthcare, and we say, oh, you know, we're going to have to pass some of this on to the employees, if that's something that is going to be happening, then as an alternate strategy, you can add this third plan in and keep everything else the same, and you could tell the employees, you can pick this plan and pay less, albeit with much less coverage. There's no copays for GPs, for specialists, and the pharmaceutical side count on paying more than if you were to take this other HMO plan. So it's just an option. It's not one or the other. You can simply add it, but just please note, I should say this for the record, that if we're going to change any plan offerings, including the addition of a plan offering, we will absolutely need to let Blue Cross know by the first of next month. We don't need Blue Cross to know who's going to take what plan. That still happens in the regular open enrollment period, and that we have plenty of time for that. But in terms of what are we planning to offer to the employees, we must let Blue Cross know by the first of next month.
Okay, and we do currently do that. We didn't used to pass any of the costs along, but then we started to, just because healthcare got so expensive. Anyone on the board, feel free to step up. But I would even vote to keep our current plan with the renewal rates with the PPO and the HMO, and then they can choose what they want. When it comes to the cost we pass along, I can revisit that with Janice and adjust the rate that we pass along depending on what plan they choose.
Hey, I don't know if I'm unmuted. I think I am. I agree with Kelly for the $800 or so increase. I think we would stay where we are.
Yes, I think we should stay with the current plan that we have going right now.
Okay. Keith, you in agreement with that?
Am I unmuted?
Yep.
You are now?
Okay. Yes, I agree.
Okay. Thanks, Kelly. You certainly are the expert on this, but I do agree with you. I think for the cost increase, we're far better off with it. Okay, at this point, with that being said, do I hear a motion to continue our coverage with the same plan with the increase for the next coming year with Blue Cross Blue Shield?
This is Ken. That's a move.
Kelly, thank you. Ken, I'm going to take you for the second.
Okay.
Any opposed? All right. No one's opposed. Plan passes. Thanks, you guys. It was a good presentation. Very condensed and very easy to follow. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, members of the board. It was a pleasure speaking with you again.
I'll ring off. Thank you so much.
All right. Do we have someone from McCall Gibson back yet?
Yeah, Tim should be back here. Tim, I'm going to go ahead and click a button. He was having some connectivity issues, but he got back in here. Tim, if you can press star six, unmute yourself, and that'll bring you into the fold here. It looks like you are live.
All right, let's try this again. Can everybody hear me?
Yes,
sure. I can hear you. Yes.
All right. You probably would like me muted better, but this is Tim Applewhite with McCall Gibson. I apologize for the microphone snafu. You should have the annual audit in your packet. Now, if you'll back up, right around, I think, page 8 in your PDF package is where we'll start. You'll just see a big page of table of contents. And during my presentation, I'll make reference to page numbers, and I'm talking about these page numbers at the bottom center of the page that you're following along with me. So if you'll continue to scroll past the table of contents, you'll see a two-page letter with our company's letterhead there at the top titled Independent Auditor's Report. This letter.
Tim, you're kind of fading in and out.
All right, is this any better?
Yeah.
Okay.
You were kind of muffled.
This two-page letter is where we express our opinion. We are able to issue an unmodified opinion. That's a clean opinion. That's the highest opinion that we as auditors can issue on your financial statements. Beginning on page 3 and going through page 7 is a section titled Management's Discussion and Analysis. This gives you kind of a high-level flyover or summary of the activities that went on during the year. It touches a little bit on everything at a pretty high level. It does have some comparative information in there. It talks about your individual fund performance, your budget performance, capital asset information, and debt as well. A little bit of everything, again, a pretty high-level flyover. If you'll continue scrolling to page 13 and 14, and what you're looking at here on this schedule on 13 and 14 is a combined presentation, statement of activities, and your governmental fund statement of revenues, expenditures. Big heading, this is your income statement, your profit and loss. Your three funds there on the left, General Fund, Debt Service Fund, and Capital Projects Fund, which spills over on page 14. Those are your short-term view, your during the current year activity, things that fall just after, you know, accruals for receivables, payables, and so forth, right after year end. As you transition across the adjustments column on page 14, that's where you get into the statement of activities, which is the entire entity. So that's your long-term view. So that's a very, very shallow dive into governmental accounting. But for your purposes, I'm going to touch on the fund information because that's more useful to you as a board. The general fund brought in revenues of just over $4.7 million. Expenditures totaled $5,137,412. There was a $64,538 transfer in from your capital projects fund to reimburse some costs that were paid last year. For the year, the $288,000 decrease to your fund balance. And at June 30th, you were sitting at $1,662,913 in your general fund balance. That, if I'm looking at your 2021 budget, if you're currently in that fiscal year now, you had over 4 months of reserves on hand. Again, snapshot in time at June 30th. Next to your general fund is your debt service fund. $1,734,231 in revenue came in. Expenditures, the cost of assessing and collecting taxes and your bond payments, $1,038,206. You had $672,065 come in, which was capitalized interest from your bond sale that will be used to pay make interest payments. And as of June 30th, the district had $3,015,235 sitting in the fund balance at fiscal year end. To put that number at year end in perspective, the average payment remaining on the life of all of your bonds that was outstanding was just a hair over $1.6 million. So you had almost 2 years worth of coverage. Now you've since refinanced some of those bonds, which I'm about to touch on here in just a second. But that just puts that number there. So you had a good, healthy fund balance in debt service fund. Page 14 has your capital projects fund, $128,000 in interest earned. Expenditures totaled $1,970,676. Again, you can see the transfer out to your general fund to reimburse those costs. Bond proceeds were received in the capital projects fund for $22,077,935. Resulted in over a $20 million increase to your fund balance because you have these funds for these projects that had not been spent yet at that point in time. And your ending fund balance was $21,186,956 in your capital projects fund. And that is an awful lot of information, so please digest that and be sure to let Andrew know if you have any questions, and I can be sure to answer those for you. We're going to end up on page 27 and 28. And as you're scrolling there, you're scrolling over the notes to the financial statement. This is information about the district's accounting policies. There's a long-term debt footnote, capital assets, deposits and investments, information about your tax rates, contracts, agreements. All of this information is used to support the numbers that we present in the face of your financial statements. On page 27, 28, just a few footnotes related to this year. Note 14 is the bond sale of your Series 2019 bonds. I'm talking about the projects that you'll fund with that. Note 15 is a standard footnote we've been putting on our audits during this period of time. Since the pandemic started, it just states that there are some certain economic uncertainties and that we have not made any adjustments to your financial statements to either accrue any amounts or project any amounts or anything of that nature. It's just more letting users of the financials know that there are economic uncertainties. And then note 16 there on page 28 is the subsequent event footnote. You refinance some of your bonds, just like you would refinance your house. You can get a lower rate in the market right now. So a lot of districts are doing it. So you refinance and basically repaid the Series 2013 bonds and issued these with a lower interest rate. Which came with a $570,000 savings to the district. So a good whopping amount there that you saved over the life of these bonds. Again, we're ultimately going to end up on page 47 and 48. And as you're scrolling there, there's a whole host of information in this report about the district's general fund expenditures, investments, tax information, a lot of schedules about your outstanding bonds. But page 47 and 48 is where I want to end tonight. And this is a five-year comparison schedule of your general fund. It's going to take your current year revenues and expenditures, and we're going to line them up with the previous 4 years so you can kind of see the history of your revenues and expenditures over that look-back period. That's a pretty useful schedule that sometimes gets buried deep in the back. But I want to let you know it's back there because I do think it's useful quite a few boards. And that is an awful lot of information to throw at you, so I apologize. It's not ideal to do it over the phone. I very much look forward to being back in person, hopefully next year. And with that, I'll pass it back to you, Joe or Andrew, and you can take it from here.
Okay, thank you, Tim. It is a lot of information there. Usually it takes me a while to read through this several times before I come up with questions. So I'll send something to Andrew. Directors, anybody have any questions for Tim right now, or do you need time to go through this at your leisure where you can come up with any questions or clarifications that you need?
I'll need to read over it some more.
Okay. Ken, are you that same, Kelly?
Yes. I need to go over
it. Yeah, I've read over it.
Okay. All right, Andrew, we'll certainly take this and go through it at this point. We will go ahead, based on what we've seen here, we will go ahead and I'll entertain a motion to approve the audit for the fiscal year ending in June 30th of 2020, with questions to come if necessary. Do I hear that motion?
I salute.
I second.
Okay, Keith, I think you made it. Kelly, you seconded. Any opposed? Motion passes. The audit is accepted. Okay, we'll move on to the next item. Andrew, if I'm saying this incorrectly, you correct me. This has to do with our grant application that Nick is processing for us, and it has to do with matching funds, which is a part of our application. Is that correct?
I did the classic Zoom thing. I started talking before I unmuted. I apologize. So that is correct, Joe. This ties to the application to the GLO that is going in later this month. Based on previous scoring rubrics that Ibera has encountered with the GLO, there's an expectation that the up to 2% matching will provide a substantial boost in the scoring rubric. Provide additional assurance that we'll be well-positioned to have our projects authorized. Looking at the budget and the projects we're looking at doing in the application, I'm very confident that we could, you know, cash flow this out of our general budget. And so this is just a formal board resolution acknowledging that a matching may come into play in the event we are awarded the three projects that we are applying for.
Okay. All right. Sounds reasonable. Certainly we'll get those grants. Would be extremely helpful in doing necessary work into the system at no cost to us directly. So together with the other resources we have, it would be a great thing. So do I hear a motion to approve the CDBG dash mitigation matching funds resolution?
This is Ken. I so move.
Thank you, Ken. Do I hear a second?
Keith, second.
Thank you, Keith. Any opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Pardon? Did I miss something there, guys?
No.
Okay, I heard. Maybe I'm dreaming of something here. Okay. We need... I'm picking up a little background noise. I'm not sure... if it's just on my side, that maybe it'll go away. All right, the next item is the approval of the bond reallocation resolution. It is for... okay, am I the only one hearing that? There's a lot of echo in the background.
I don't hear nothing.
I don't hear that.
Hey, okay. Board, on this bond reallocation resolution, I would ask that you table that till next month, have it on the next agenda. We're circulating it with Andrew and Hal. There's a lot of moving parts to it. I want to make sure all the figures are correct and that our descriptions that we are giving to TSEC are adequate to give us the flexibility to use that bond money for our project. So if y'all wouldn't mind tabling that one, it'll be on the November agenda for approval.
Okay. It's tabled. Okay. We're going to get out of order here just a little bit. We're going to do as we have in the past here to speed things along. We are going to entertain a motion to approve the minutes, the field superintendent's report, and the office manager's report all at one time. You have had copies of these. If you've had questions, I'm sure you've already forwarded them to the respective parties. So do I hear a motion to approve the minutes for the regular meeting on September 15th, field superintendent's report, and the office manager's report? Excuse me, there's one other.
The investment report.
Yeah, the investment report's not on the agenda. So. Steve, can we go ahead and approve that even though it's not on the agenda?
No, Joe, you'll have to save that till next month and approve the next two at that time.
Okay. All right. So as I originally said, we would deal with the minutes, field superintendent's office manager's report. Do I hear a motion to accept those reports as presented?
I accept.
Okay. I think that was Kelly. I'm not sure on the second.
Keith.
Keith, thank you, Keith. Okay, it's been moved in second to accept those reports. Any opposed? Motion passes. Those reports are accepted. Hal, we're going to go to you. Are you on the line?
I am.
Okay.
All right. The only thing I really need to report this evening is having to do with the wastewater treatment plant. You know, we've had quite significant rainfalls and hurricanes blowing in the area. Fortunately, none actually hit the plant, but they did get a lot of rain. Some of the photos I think I sent last month shows a lot of water in the excavations, but they got pretty quick on to getting the water out. They went back to work. They have completed demolishing the old standby clarifier and the old plant. They've already started excavation on the new aeration basin and the new chlorine contact basin. We've already gone through 76 submittals on materials and procedures and 11 RFIs. The contractor has submitted his first pay application. It's attached, or it's on the agenda, but it's also attached in the packet. So their first pay application is in the amount of $546,019.71. It pretty much represents their mobilization insurance and bonds, partial demolition at the time they submitted partial demolition, partial excavation, and all the submittal processes, material on hand, and other site work. So all the work is completed to date, appears to be performed in the general conformance of the plans and specs. We recommend this application for payment, and a 10% change has been withheld. And there were some progress photos, but apparently the method of scanning at your office turned them all black, so you can't really see anything.
Okay. All right. Anybody have any questions for Hal? Okay. All right. Then we're going to do the same thing here since they're tied neck to neck. Do I hear a motion to approve the engineer's report and approve payment of pay estimate number one for Loom Construction in the amount of $546,019.71?
I submit.
Thank you, Kelly. Do I hear a second?
This cannot second.
Thank you, Ken. Any opposed? All right. Thanks, Hal. Good work. Please let us know if you have any concerns there. Okay, we're moving forward. Andrew, I think you're on.
Remember to click unmute this time. Here we go. So Gulf Coast Water Authority, there's still throes of discussion about the additional water availability that was a result of their reallocation with TSEC. We're not needing any of it. They already allocated some to us just in case, but we're not anticipating any in the near future, or honestly, the far future. We've got a significant reserve set in place already with our current contract, so no issues there. We have had additional communication from the Galveston County Tax Office these past couple of months as SB2 implemented some changes in how tax documentation needs to be reported and recorded and put on the website. So we've been working with them to ensure compliance on that. I did attend a American Water Works Association online conference. First time they've been doing it online. They had a couple of technical glitches, but overall it was a pretty good conference discussing the state of the industry as well as just providing those resources and connections that trade shows often do. We've had three letters this month from the Open Records Division with the Attorney General's Office pursuant to claims filed by Mr. Jedaline and Mr. Haskett. Both all three of those letters at this time have indicated they're satisfied with our processes. And then
Andrew.
Yes, sir.
Andrew.
Yes, sir.
What did those letters actually pertain to?
They pertain to complaints regarding Open Records requests and compliance with the Act. So there are there's a handbook about as long as my arm with all the different regulations and things pursuant to Open Records. And whenever we respond to an Open Records request, there are certain things that need to be met. Mr. Jedaline and Mr. Haskett felt I did not meet those. And so whenever they discussed that with the Attorney General's office, I receive a letter requesting additional information on those specific requests. Once I provide them with my documentation on the method of how they were handled, I have yet to receive a reprimand from them on that. So,
okay. I think I remember you mentioning, did one involve the charge that was required for some of the documents?
Yeah, so there are the three letters that we received that were simply discussion were stating that previous records were handled correctly. I did receive two on Friday after I had turned in this report already. Two reports that were challenging the estimate, the cost estimate tied to specific requests. Just a little primer for everyone. I won't bore everyone on this, but whenever an Open Records request is submitted to any governmental entity, if the request encompasses less than $40 of estimated charges based on a set amount for labor and materials charges, the entity is allowed to charge back that cost to the person requesting the documents. If the request is going to encompass more than $40 worth of charges, an estimate is required to detail to the best of the entity's knowledge what the associated resources, time, materials would be related to that request. And if it meets certain requirements, a down deposit can be required prior to starting those requests. The two letters that I received on Friday pertained to two separate requests, one from Mr. Haskett, one from Mr. Jedaline, I believe. They're not in front of me, but I believe they're both from Mr. Haskett. And he was challenging the estimates that I provided. And so my process is within 10 business days, I respond to the Attorney General in detail how I came to those estimates, what the documents specifically are, and how they play into that aforementioned pre-set charge schedule. So there's some response necessary that'll go to the Attorney General. But like I said, to this point, I've done several of these requests for more information, and they're typically satisfied with the processes we have in place.
Was this a large amount of money we're talking about?
One of the requests was initially $300 and was brought down to about $11 for in-person inspection. And the other one was, again, a several hundred dollar charge. So,
okay. All right. I'm sorry to interrupt. I just
Sort of confused there. Not a problem. So, and then also I did have a communication with Secretary of State. I am a notary public outside of my position as district manager. I've maintained that for some time now, and there was some requests for documentation by Mr. Jedelina that I had some communication with the Secretary of State. Again, they're satisfied with our process at this time. We have at the water treatment plant, we did some improvements on some things. We refreshed the chemical line on the well. Again, that's not something that's currently in service, but given the work on 146 as it's coming down closer to where GCWA's transmission line crosses over, we wanted to make sure that everything is primed and ready in the event there is an accident, that we can bring that online. So we got new chemicals because it hasn't been used in some time, made sure all the connections are working correctly, and did a little test run, and everything seemed good to go. As mentioned, it's your treatment plant. We had our first construction meeting detailing how things are going. Everything is good to go. We have been working with CenterPoint to relocate some of the power lines on the property. Previously, we thought they were not going to be an issue, but as things started moving on site, we realized we needed them relocated. So that is in the works, and it should be done here within the next month or so. So that's good. We also will be getting a quote for some upgrades on the security cameras that are out there. They are reaching near end of life. And, you know, rather than replace them once they're broken, I'd rather to make sure we have a constant security feed out there. So we'll be looking at cost estimates on that. We have been doing additional flushing in the system. There have been several reports from customers regarding quality concern. We're not quite sure what is going on, but we have maintained our required chlorine residual, but we have had to do additional flushing as a result. So I'm in discussion with Mr. Keller on the opportunity for installing automatic flushing valves throughout the district in certain points, just to make sure we maintain that residual and keep the water moving. So right now, that's just in the discussion stage. We haven't even looked at cost on those, but that'll be sort of what we look at to potentially supplement the manual flushing that we do from the hydrants. We've been working with Ardura on this grant proposal, where things are starting to get to the button-up stage as we near the application deadline at the end of this month. Everything is on track. They said that the process looks good, our budgets look good, and they're really excited about the opportunity and feel really good about it, that we should have at least one or hopefully multiple of our projects that we're trying to get greenlit put through. So that's exciting. And then this past month, we have been working with both RS and WSR and CDC, our contractors, at following the competitive seal bid that was had previously, working on coordinating those work orders and tap installations and processes and getting project quotes for different line extensions. Everyone's been working really well. There's a good responsiveness and a quick getting things done. So very excited about that. Regarding community engagement, several resident communications, talked with seven people about different infrastructure improvements. We did have seven comments regarding Texas Pride on different trash or recycling things that we've resolved with the company and the customer. One question about the volunteer fire department operations, which I redirected to the fire department for them to follow up on. And I had three people discussing existing payment plans and arrangements regarding COVID situations. And so we've been working with them on addressing the past due balance while not impacting their continuance of service. And then we did have one RV park which changed hands. And so the new owners were asking how the moratorium works and potential for expansion, which I expressed is obviously not currently available. But they were open to that, and they just wanted to sort of understand how lay of the land, as it were. So that was good. Public Information Act requests we had four this month. It was several thousand documents. All of those are pending payment, like I mentioned earlier about the cost estimates. We've only got one left on the docket, and that represents a couple hundred documents. So we're working on that one. 40 taps were requested. And I mean, I'll remind everyone, back when I started almost 3 years ago, which is hard to think about, but almost 3 years ago come January, the regular amount of taps that we got requested on a monthly basis was closer to 12. And so this 40 tap requests really represents a significant expansion that's been going on these past couple of years that's just ramping up as people are coming out of Houston, people are looking for a waterfront home to retire or just have as a weekend getaway, but we're definitely seeing that demand. So that's where it's exciting. We'll work on this reallocation in the grant to help improve the infrastructure to where we can service these, because out of that 40 that we requested, only 29 were able to get taps based on the existing infrastructure, 11 of which needed some kind of improvement or extension to service. So we did have 5 of those people express interest in potentially financing those, and actually one of them did pay for it. So we've got some expansion in the there. As mentioned earlier, included in your packet was a letter from Todd and Associates. They're the firm that the fire department worked with on the 2017 and 2018 review of their books. They will be working with them on 2019. And going forward, we'll have that annual review. The general gist of the letter just said that everything was reviewed and it seems to be in line. So that was relayed to me via email. I'm now thinking about it, might not have made it in the packets, but we are expecting a physical version that will be put into the website and future reference. So, but that's the everything from my report, unless the board has any questions or anything.
Good report, Andrew. Directors, anyone have anything for Andrew?
No, it looks real good.
Okay. Kelly, you good?
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right, guys. We're kind of getting to the end of our agenda. Anyone have anything, Director, that we need to talk about that wasn't on the agenda and is not an action item?
When do we swear in our new board member?
Next meeting, which will hopefully be a live one along with the directors that have won the election.
Okay, very good.
Okay, if no one has anything else at this point, Andrew, I don't think we have any reason to be in an executive session, do we?
No, sir.
Okay. All right. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
I so move.
Thank you, Kelly. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
That was a Ken and Keith combined second?
Yes.
Anyone opposed? All right. All meeting is adjourned. Have a good night. Bye-bye.